Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha, Text Number 12. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. O King, if we can give proper protection to the living beings in the material world, that will be the best service for me. When the Supreme Lord sees you to be a good protector of the conditioned souls, certainly the master of the senses will be very pleased with you. Purport. The whole administrative system is arranged for the purpose of going back home, back to Godhead. Brahma is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Manu is the representative of Brahma. Similarly, all other kings on different planets of the universe are representatives of Manu. The law book for the entire human society is the Manu Samhita, which directs all activities towards the transcendental service of the Lord. Every king, therefore, must know that his responsibility in administration is not merely to exact taxes from the citizens, but to see personally that the citizens under him are being trained in Vishnu worship. Everyone must be educated in Vishnu worship and engaged in the devotional service of Rishikesh, the owner of the senses. The conditioned souls are meant not to satisfy their material senses, but to satisfy the senses of Rishikesh, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the purpose of the complete administrative system. One who knows this secret, as disclosed here in the version of Brahma, is the perfect administrative head. One who does not know this is a show-bottle administrator. By training the citizens in the devotional service of the Lord, the head of a state can be free in his responsibility. Otherwise, he will fail in the erroneous duty entrusted to him and thus be punishable by the supreme authority. There is no alternative in the discharge of administrative, there is no other alternative in the discharge of administrative duty. Translation. O King, if you can give proper protection to the living beings in the material world, that will be the best service for me. When the Supreme Lord sees you to be a good protector of the conditioned souls, certainly the master of the senses will be very pleased with you. Om Gyana Dhimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasavi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here Brahma is instructing Manu, am I correct, in this chapter? So Brahma is speaking to his son Manu, who had asked him for instructions. So he had asked him to give him some instructions. Then Brahma is here advising him what he should be doing, because Manu is, he's a king. And here it's referred to Swayambhuva Manu. So Swayambhuva Manu is a king, and he was asking his father how he should perform his duties. And Brahma, being his father, is enlightening his son in his duties. So here, and in the previous verse, he's telling him that he should rule according to religious principles and to protect the citizens. Because a king, they have a praja. Praja means someone who is a citizen of the state. So a king usually has a state which they rule, and in that state they are citizens. So those citizens are not only limited to human beings, but they are, the word praja is very broad, and praja includes anyone who has taken birth in that state. So whether it's a plant or an animal, or a monkey, or a chimpanzee, or whatever. And whoever has taken birth in that kingdom, they are a praja, they are a citizen. So they are awarded the rights of a citizen. So in today's human society, citizens have rights, you know, freedom of expression, to live without fear. These are some, you know, basic rights in the constitution which every citizen has. So, but in the Vedic times, the rights applied not only to human beings but to all living entities, and it was the duty of the king to protect all living beings under their shelter, because whoever takes birth is under the shelter of the king. That is their job. That is their job description. Their job description is to offer protection. So there's different varnas. There's the Brahman, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras. So the duty of the Brahmanas is to give education. Patan, patan, yajan, yajan. Is to study the Vedas and teach others, perform sacrifices and teach others how to perform sacrifices, and to engage in worship and to teach others how to engage in worship. So the main duty of the Brahmanas is more or less education. Teaching means education. So they are supposed to educate. So they are employed by the Kshatriyas to impart all types of education, but especially spiritual education. So we see the Brahmanas are the teachers. Against Dronacharya, he was teaching military education. He was a Brahmana. So their job is to teach, whether it is material, arts or science. But most importantly, the spiritual side. They are meant to teach Krishna consciousness. So in a proper human society, where it's functioning properly, the king will have Brahmanas. And the role of the Brahmanas is to educate people materially, but also spiritually, to teach them knowledge of... Brahmana means to teach knowledge of Brahman. So they are meant to educate the citizenry in knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the different aspects of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Brahman, the Paramatma, and Bhagavan aspect. So they are meant to educate in all three. So the main duty of the Brahmanas is to teach others by example. And then the duty of the Vaishyas is to engage in agriculture and business. That's their main duty. So the Brahmana is compared to the head, the Vaishya is compared to the stomach, meaning economic development. So their responsibility in society is to engage in economic development. So they make sure the business is going on, there's food being produced, and animals are being protected. Rishi, Goraksha, Vanijyam. So their main duty is to protect the cows, Rishi, Goraksha, and also to engage in business. So today we only see a lot of business going on, but the Vaishyas, they're not protecting the cows. And in fact, some of their businesses are to kill the cows and to make money off killing the animals. Poor animals is the opposite. And they are also meant to be subservient to the spiritual master and to the Vedic authorities. That way their propensity to make money is checked. Otherwise, when that propensity to make money is not checked, then they engage in all kinds of sinful activities in making money. So when that is checked by the Vedas and the higher authorities, the spiritual master and the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, then that the money is made in according to the tenets of the Vedas. And they are also meant to support the other three classes. And then the Shudras are meant to assist the other three classes. And the role of the Kshatriyas, as it is pointed out here, is the main duty of the Kshatriyas, or the kings, or the monarchs, or the presidents, or the prime ministers in the modern era, is to offer protection. That's the main duty. The main duty is to give protection. If a Kshatriya is not offering protection, they're not really a Kshatriya. So then the question is, protection from what? So a Kshatriya is meant to protect the Praja on different levels. First of all, they have to recognize that everyone is the citizen, not only human beings. Like today, the Kshatriyas, or those in the position of a Kshatriya, they consider citizens to be only human beings and no one else. And even that protection is very limited. Only a certain class of human beings are being protected. Those who have with vested interests, those who are supporting them mainly, they are being protected. So, but the duty of the Kshatriyas is to protect on different levels. So the lowest level is to make sure that everyone's material needs are taken care of. So they're meant to, we all are anxious for gain and safety. Every living entity is anxious for gain and safety. So their duty is to make sure that the citizens are safe. They're feeling secure. They're not feeling insecure. That's their job. So they're not feeling insecure due to finances. They're not feeling insecure due to lack of physical security. Right? There's too many thieves, or there's too much crime. There's too much, you know, social chaos. They're meant to make sure all those things are not there. And financially, they're feeling secure. Also, they're meant to ensure that they're feeling emotionally secure, and also intellectually they're feeling secure on different levels. So they're stimulated and challenged enough, the citizens, on all levels, and they're feeling safe. They're not feeling unsafe, because once people start feeling unsafe, then, as Navina Niradhar Prabhu was pointing out, they are just in survival mode. So they are just thinking about how to, you know, just they're basically thinking about themselves, how they can look after themselves. So that is looking after people's physical safety. So they're meant to offer protection. But higher than that is they're meant to offer protection spiritually as well. As it's pointed out in the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, Prabhupada writes in a purport, that the Kshatriyas are meant to protect the citizens from the bondage of lust. That's their, you know, that's the overriding principle. It's to offer protection from the bondage of lust. So they are meant to have systems in place that they protect the citizens from lust. And the way traditionally they would do it, they would have the brahmanas in there, and their job was to educate people spiritually. As Prabhupada writes in the purport here, that every king therefore must know that his responsibility in administration is not merely to exact taxes from the citizens, but to see personally that the citizens under him are being trained in Vishnu worship. So that's the main responsibility, and we can see in today's context that is not taking place, that the citizenry is not being educated and trained in engaging in devotional service. There's no systematic education of the principles of Krishna consciousness. But there is systematic education of how to be a consumer, basically. There's very systematic education in place how we can be a good consumer and just churn the economic machine. So the Kshatriyas, they have forgotten their main duty, and they're mainly focused on economic development and to cater for the sense gratification of the people, because they are elected by vote. So because they are elected by popular vote, they have to fulfill the demands of the citizens who don't know what they really want. So because the leaders are ignorant and the people are ignorant, so they don't really know what they want. So and they are trying to fulfill their needs, their material needs, to the best of the capacity, but it's not going anywhere, and we can see that people are not feeling protected these days, and they are speaking against their leadership. So even if there's any article on the newspaper, and below if you look at the comment section, people are openly criticizing their leader, whether it's Abbott or whoever was there before. So they're openly criticizing because they're not feeling, the main reason is they're not feeling protected. And too much taxes are being implied on them, or they're feeling financially insecure, there's no job security. So they're feeling very insecure, and then they're openly criticizing. And we can see in Vedic times that the kings were very responsible, and they were engaging in their prime duty. And there are many examples, like Maharaj Yudhishthir, Prithu Maharaj, Maharaj Ambarish, Prahlad Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj. There are so many examples in the Bhagavatam of kings who were engaging in their duty very responsibly. Dhruva Maharaj, thank you. His father also, King Anga, Maharaj Anga. We can see in the example of Yudhishthir Maharaj, he was a very responsible king, and his management was so perfect that there was no types of distress there in his kingdom. There was no mental illnesses in his kingdom, it is said in the Bhagavatam. And not only that, it was not too hot, it was not too cold. The weather was perfect. The ocean was giving wealth. The rivers, they were producing, what were the rivers producing? I forgot, it said in the first canto. That Mother Earth was giving all sorts of opulences. And the Bhumi, she was not withholding the seeds. Everything was there in abundance. And people had no physical problems or no mental issues. And that was because of very good governance. And today we can see it is contrary. And that is because of bad management. We can see with Prithu Maharaj, when he was ruling, there was abundance of everything. So when the Kshatriyas, they are ruling according to the tenets of Vedic scripture, and especially Manu Samhita, as it is pointed out here, then everything is in abundance and nature cooperates. Because Krishna wants people to be happily, comfortably situated, so they can engage in their prime duty, which is to become Krishna conscious. So then Krishna, through the agency of material nature, supplies enough resources so people can be comfortably situated and engage in their prime responsibility. And when the kings, when the leadership, they don't engage in their prime duty, then there are heavy consequences, as it's pointed out in the purport here. Where Prabhupada says, by training the citizens in the devotional service of the Lord, the head of a state can be free in his responsibility. Otherwise, he will fail in the unrenuous duty entrusted to him and thus be punishable by the supreme authority. So, not only will one be punished in the next life, but even in this life, they are punished very severely. And we can see very extreme examples very recently with the Arab rising, that the people, the citizenry, they were very frustrated with their ruler, and they were not feeling protected. So there was an uprising, and social media helped a lot in that, and in getting everyone together, the power of the masses. So they all got together, and instead the leader, they reacted very foolishly. So because to hang on to his position, he used force to curb the citizenry. And then the result was that, you know, some of them, they were thrown off power, and some of them were killed. Like, for example, Colonel Gaddafi, he was killed very, you know, brutally and in a very disrespectful way. So we can see that on an extreme side, that is the consequence of not taking care of the citizenry. When they're not happy, then they revolt. We can see the French Revolution. Even in India, we can see the whole country. They got together, you know, inspired by Gandhi and other leaders, and they overthrew the British. So this we can see time and time again. History repeats itself. So when they're not cared for, then people, they revolt. And we can see when Maharaj Yudhishthir, when he was banished to the forest, his entire kingdom, they loved him so much that they followed him. And he had to tell them, you know, don't come with me, please go back. So because they really liked him. And when people, they like the leader, they actually cooperate. When they feel cared for and protected, then they cooperate. And even if when the leader, they make mistakes, they overlook that. And they work together. But in Kali Yuga, it's the opposite. And we can see with modern politics, people are not happy. And in ISKCON also we can see that Srila Prabhupada, he emphasized very strongly in the training and education. In the temples, Prabhupada emphasized that temples are places of education where there is systematic training and education being imparted. So here we can see there's a lot of systematic education in the form of Bhakti Shastris, Bhakti Vaibhav, Bhakti Vedanta. So this is systematic education being propagated for the benefit of the members of this community and the wider community in the form of preaching programs being taking place, for example, you know, mantra lounge or urban yoga or so many bhakti vrikshas or programs for new people. This is systematic education being propagated. And the idea is to educate and train devotees. And when devotees are educated and trained properly, they're happy. And then management becomes much more easier. And if devotees are not trained and educated, then it becomes very difficult to manage also. So education and training is very important. And we can see Prabhupada, he instituted these courses for a reason. So devotees, when they're educated, they feel happy and they want to give back more. So we can even see, like, when someone joins the army or even someone takes up a graduate program, part of a corporation, the idea is to train them for a while. And they invest a lot in training. So there's a very nice pastime in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, which covers many of these points. I was reading this morning. It is the chapter 89 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or even the Krishna book. And this pastime of this, once upon a time there was a Brahmana in Dwarka, who was he was married, and he gave birth to a child. So when this child was born, and this child touched the ground, the child died immediately. So then the Brahmana thought, how is this possible? I haven't done anything wrong, and you know, the birth is normal, the child is normal, and I haven't killed the child, and I've just put him on the ground and he died. How is this so? So the Brahmana was bewildered, and he meditated on the issue for a while, and then he came to the conclusion that this is because of the king, Ugrasen. Because the king is not engaging in his duty properly. So as I was mentioning, before the Vedic kings, they were very responsible. And I gave the example of Maharaj Yudhishthira, where his management was so good that there was no problems. So he thought, because this death is premature, this child has died prematurely, therefore it is the fault of the king. So he took the child and he went to assembly of Maharaj Ugrasen. And there, he started to accuse Maharaj Ugrasen. So there he used the word, he said that, you are a Brahma Dvisha. He told Ugrasen, you are a Brahma Dvisha, which means that one who is envious of the Brahmanas. So he said, you are envious of the Brahmanas. And then he called him a Brahma Dvishi. Sorry, that's the same one. Brahma Dvishi. One who is envious of the Brahmanas. So he accused him like that. And he said, you are a Shathadhi. Shathadhi means falsely intelligent. Because a king is meant to be very intelligent, to see to the comforts of the citizens. So he said, you're not intelligent and you're not seeing to our comforts, and this child has died untimely because of you. And then he called him a Lubdha. So Lubdha means one who is very greedy. And he said, you're very greedy and you're just hanging on to the position because of all the perks and power and the comforts, etc. So you're very greedy. And you're self-interested, he said like this. Then he said, you're Visha Yatmanaha, which is more or less the same thing, greedy or self-interested. And he said, he accused the king of also Shatra Bandhu, which means like a Brahma Bandhu, a Shatra Bandhu means someone who is not qualified to be a Kshatriya. So they are taking on that position, but they don't have the qualifications. So in this way he accused him, and then he went away. And this happened 9 times. So the second time, when the Brahmana, he gave birth to a child, same thing happened. And he died, and he took him back to the court, and he accused the king. And he came back, 3rd time, same thing, 4th time, 5th time, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th time.
Brahmana's wife.
Yeah, sorry, Brahmana's wife gave birth, thank you. Thanks for the correction. You're a doctor, you know better. So, and like that, the same thing happened. And he kept going back. And the ninth time when he went back, Arjuna and Krishna, they were present in the assembly of King Ugrasen. And the same thing, he kept on accusing the king. And Arjuna, he was there. So he heard this and he was wondering, why is he, you know, accusing the king of all these things? Ugrasen is a very righteous king and is a very responsible king. So how is it so he's accusing? So I'll just read to you what Arjuna said. So when Arjuna, he heard the Brahmana accusing, he became very inquisitive and he approached that Brahmana. He said, my dear Brahmana, why do you say that there are no proper Kshatriyas to protect the citizens of your country? And he said, is there not even someone who can pretend to be a Kshatriya? Who can carry a bow and arrow, at least to make a show of protection? Do you think that all the royal personalities in this country simply engage in performing sacrifices with the brahmanas but have no chivalrous power? So Arjuna was indicating that the kshatriya should not sit back comfortably on the pretext of, you know, performing rituals, sacrifices, etc., but not protect the citizens. So he was saying in that way. And then he continued, he says, if the brahmanas feel unwanted separation from their wives and children, and the kshatriya kings do not take care of them, then such kshatriyas are to be considered no more than stage players. So then Arjuna was saying like that. In dramatic performances in the theatre, an actor may play the part of a king, but no one expects any benefits from such a make-believe king. Similarly, if the king or the executive head of a state cannot give protection to the head of the social structure, he is considered merely a bluffer. So then Arjuna, he said, I promise that I shall give protection to your children, and if I'm unable to do so, I will commit suicide. So Arjuna, he said, I will enter the blazing fire and I will commit suicide to overcome the, you know, sinful reactions. So when the brahmana, he heard Arjuna speak like this, he wasn't convinced. And the reason he wasn't convinced is, he told him, he said, the reason I'm not convinced is Ugrasen, he couldn't do anything about it. Krishna couldn't do anything about it. Krishna's there. Balaram is there, he couldn't do anything. Pradyumna couldn't do anything about it. Neither could Aniruddha do anything about it. So he said, if they all can't do anything about it, what about you, you know? What will you do about it? You can't do anything. So he challenged him like that. He said that if the Supreme Personality of Godhead can't do anything about it, then who are you to do anything? You're just a living entity. And he said, I consider you like an inexperienced child who's speaking. He told him like that. He said, you're promising like an inexperienced child. So then Arjuna, he understood that the brahmana had lost faith in the kshatriyas. And in order to restore his faith, he seemingly criticized Krishna. He seemingly attacked Krishna. Because he understood that this brahmana has lost faith in the kshatriyas, in the governance of the kshatriyas. So then Arjuna spoke as if criticizing Lord Krishna. And then he told the brahmana, he said, my dear brahmana, he said, I'm neither Sankarshan nor Krishna, nor Krishna, nor one of Krishna's sons like Pradyumna and Aniruddha. He says, my name is Arjuna and I carry the bow known as Gandiva. You cannot insult me, for I have satisfied even Lord Shiva by my prowess when we were both hunting in the forest. So then he narrated to the brahmana the event where he had a fight with Lord Shiva. And he satisfied Lord Shiva by his prowess, and then Lord Shiva, he gave him some special arrows and he gave him mantras. So he told the brahmana of this incident, and he said when Lord Shiva was satisfied, he gave him the weapon known as Pashupata. So Arjuna told him, do not doubt my chivalry. So in this way Arjuna was giving him confidence, he was instilling that faith in him. And he said, I shall bring back your sons even after fight with death personified. So when he gave him that assurance, the brahmana, he became convinced and he went back home. So the brahmana was happy, he was convinced, he went back home. So then when the brahmana's wife, she gave birth to another child, then the brahmana at night, he called Arjuna. He cried out for Arjuna, and Arjuna, he heard that and he came in the middle of the night. And then Arjuna, with all his weapons, he first touched the sanctified water, and then he uttered holy mantras and he went there. And he took the arrow presented to him by Lord Shiva. And when Arjuna was going to the brahmana's house, he thought to himself, and he was only remembering Lord Shiva, not Krishna, because Arjuna, for a moment, he thought that, you know, Krishna wasn't able to give protection to the brahmana. I've seen that, but I will depend on Lord Shiva. So he was meditating on Lord Shiva and not on Krishna. And then Krishna was living near the Brahmana's house, and he decided to teach him a lesson. So he thought it's better to take shelter of Shiva than Krishna. And he went there. And when he went there, he by his prowess, he protected the house of the Brahmana with arrows and everything. He created some arrangement. And when the Brahmana's wife gave birth, same thing happened. But this time, something unusual happened. That the baby disappeared. The baby disappeared, all the arrows which he had put up there, they disappeared. And even the arrow given by Lord Shiva, that disappeared. And Krishna, he was living nearby, near the Brahmana's house, and he was watching all this thing, and he was laughing, he was having fun. He watched all this drama, and he was just enjoying it. And in order to teach Arjuna a lesson, he took the baby, the arrows, and Lord Shiva's arrow away. He took that away. And then the Brahmana was fried, and he began to accuse Arjuna again. He began to accuse him. So the Brahmana told Arjuna, he says, the Brahmana began to accuse Arjuna, "Everyone, see my foolishness. I put my faith in the words of Arjuna, who is important and who is expert only in false promises." Like the modern day politicians. Who is expert in false promises. "How foolish I was to believe Arjuna. He promised to protect my child when even Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna had failed. If such great personalities could not protect my child, then who can do so? I therefore condemn Arjuna for his false promise, and I also condemn his celebrated bow Gandiva and his impudence in declaring himself greater than Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna." So Arjuna was very heavily criticized by this Brahmana. And then Arjuna, he thought to himself, okay, the child has gone, but I can still get the child back. So Arjuna had mystic potencies, and he empowered himself with one mystic potency by which he could go to different planets. So he went on a search mission to find this child. So first he went to Yamaloka. Arjuna went to Yamaloka. And he looked everywhere in Yamaloka. He couldn't find. Then he went to Indra's planet to look for him. No luck. Then he went to the planet of the fire demigod. Then he went to the planet of the Nithri demigod. Then he went to Vayaloka. And then to Varunaloka. And then he went to Rasathal. After he got frustrated up there, he went down. He went to Rasathal. He looked everywhere. No luck. And then he went to Brahmaloka, where ordinarily someone cannot go with mystic powers. But Arjuna, he was able to go to Brahmaloka. And there also, no luck. And when he couldn't find the baby everywhere, including Brahmaloka, he became very depressed and he decided to commit suicide because he had given his word to the Brahmana. I'll kill myself in the fire. So he lit a fire and he was about to commit suicide, and then Krishna came. So Krishna said, why are you committing suicide? You don't have to foolishly commit suicide. And the way he persuaded Arjuna was, he said, don't enter the fire because it will look bad on him. Because Arjuna is a friend of Krishna. And if we commit suicide, it will look bad on Krishna, that his friend committed suicide. So he said, so not to, blemish his image, so don't commit suicide. So in this way, Krishna, he convinced Arjuna. And he said, I will find your sons for you. I will find that boy. Come with me. So in that way, Arjuna got convinced. And then Krishna, he called his chariot, and the four horses, they came. Do you know the names of the horses? Krishna's chariot. They are Shaibya, Sugriva, Megapushpa, and Balahaka. These are the names of Krishna's horses. So the chariot came and these horses came and they set off north. You need to sit over here. The men on this side.
Yeah,
no problems. So the horses came in the chariot, and Krishna and Arjuna, they boarded the chariot, and they proceeded north, and they went for interplanetary travel. And they were going, passing all the planets, and eventually they reached the... where did they reach? The covering of the universe. So they penetrated the covering of the universe. When they reached the covering of the universe, it was very dark. And Krishna's horses, they're not ordinary. Like, Krishna's not ordinary. But they were playing the part of mundane horses. They were behaving like ordinary horses. So when they saw the darkness, they were frightened. So the horses got bewildered, and they refused to proceed in the darkness. Because they were feeling fearful, you know, they didn't want to go into the unknown. And then Krishna, he took out his Sudarshan Chakra, and the Sudarshan Chakra was in front of the chariot. And it is said that the effulgence of the Sudarshan Chakra was 1,000 times more brighter than the sun. That's just, it is said in the Krishna book like that. And there was enough illumination, and then they proceeded further. And when they proceeded further, they reached, they came to the Brahma Jyoti. And when they came to the Brahma Jyoti, Arjuna, he was blinded by the effulgence and he covered his eyes. He put his hand on his eyes because it was too bright for him. And then Krishna, he preached to him about the Brahma Jyoti and how Brahma Jyoti is coming from him. Then they proceeded further and then they reached the Karana Ocean or the Viraja River. So they saw a big hurricane, you know, like hurricane here. They saw a big hurricane, and the water was very agitated. And then they went further, and within the water they saw a palace. And in that palace, they went in that palace was a very opulent palace, and Arjuna was impressed. And in that palace they saw Anantashesh, very beautifully dressed, you know, very white as Mount Kailash, the snow on Mount Kailash. And then on that Anantashesh, they saw Mahavishnu lying there, living there on Anantashesh. And when they saw Mahavishnu, Krishna, he offered obeisances, and Arjuna, he followed suit. Arjuna also offered obeisances. And there, then Mahavishnu, he told them, I just wanted to have your darshan. He said, I wanted to have darshan of both of you. And that's why I stole the children of the Brahmanas. And then he gave the children back and they went back. And by the time they reached back, the children of the Brahmanas had grown up. And then they returned those children to the Brahmanas. So this is the pastime which there are many points in this pastime, but in relationship to this verse, it talks about how the kings are meant to offer protection, and here we can see that how this point came out very strongly. So there's many pastimes in the Bhagavatam. So this is one pastime we discussed. So I'll leave it there. If you have any questions or comments on this verse.
What was the point of that story?
The point of the story is that the king is meant to offer protection to their citizens. And what are the consequences of not doing that? And here, in this case, the consequence was the king was accused by the Brahmana. That was the main point I was trying to highlight. How their main duty is to offer protection. And the citizens need to feel cared for and protected. And the rest was just extra. Yes, probably.
What do you think of Ram Raj?
Ram Raja, yes. That's very good. In 8th canto, we can see Lord Ram. It was Ram Raja. These days, Prabhupada said they want the kingdom of Ram without Ram. So, same point. Lord Ram, he was a perfect ruler. And he made sure his praja was Krishna conscious and they were well looked after. He's the ideal king. What are conditioned souls? Living entities who are bound by conditions. So the conditions of the material world are birth, death, old age, disease. So we are not free. We are bound by conditions. And we are also bound by conditioning, by the three modes of nature. So that's a conditioned soul. Who's materially influenced? Question is how we can make an impact on the government or the country?
Whole system.
How we can... Yeah, it's not easy. As we can see, the governments are not Krishna conscious and they don't govern by scripture. Prabhupada's strategy was twofold. One was to educate the masses through you know, systematic propagation of knowledge in the form of opening preaching centers where we can invite people to hear and we can educate them that way by distribution of wide-scale distribution of literature, Prabhupada's books. That has a very strong impact on the general populace. By distributing prasadam, you know, the holy name, and this is Prabhupada's strategy. This is one way you influence the masses. And once the masses are influenced, they will be intelligent enough to question the leadership. You know, that's one of the reasons why the Soviets, they were very threatened by the Hare Krishna movement, was because they knew we had books, and these books can influence people. And they were very choosy which literature people read. So, and they wanted to brainwash people, you know, conform to their ideology. So that's why Hare Krishna was a threat, because they were distributing books and which can influence people. So by distribution of literature, the holy name, prasadam, and having centers and temples, this gives people an opportunity to come in touch with devotees where they can take up to the process of Krishna consciousness and then become intelligent enough. And when we see, when there's enough people who are interested like that, as Prabhupada said, even if 1% of people become devotees, that they'll change the world. So there will be an influence. And then the other approach is you talk to the leaders and try to convince them. And Prabhupada, he did both. He spoke to very important people. You know, he spoke to them and he tried to convince the leaders and the ministers. He tried to have appointments with, who was it, Nehru, Indira Gandhi, different leaders, the leaders of America. He wanted to meet prominent people so he could convince them about the importance of Krishna consciousness. Because if they are convinced, yadyad acharati shreshtas tattad eva tirojanaha, that whatever a great man does, common men follow. And Prabhupada wanted to meet influential people in society. So these days, the artists or, you know, we can see, for example, Radhana Swami is going around meeting very influential people. It's trying to just preach to them, make friends with them. If not make them devotees, just make friends with them. And when, if they become favorable, then they can have an influence on their people. And here in Melbourne also the same approach is being taken. It was started through interfaith preaching, and now, you know, connections are made with the government people and many important people in Victoria. And that slowly it will have an influence. So that's the approach, the twofold approach. Systematically propagate Krishna consciousness to the masses, and also try to approach the heads of state. And be patient, because it's going to take time. It's not going to happen immediately. We have to vigorously try, but same time be patient. And prasadam distribution is very powerful. It softens people. So that's the approach. And Prabhupada did say that when high court judges they come with the tilak, that is a sign of success. Recently, I saw one video on Facebook posted by one devotee, where one of the members of parliament, she was glorifying the Rath Yatra, which took place in Sydney. And she was the member of Parramatta. So she went in the parliament in Canberra. She was, you can watch this, it's on Facebook. She was glorifying all the devotees, Varanaika Prabhu and others, and she was glorifying Lord Jagannath. And she said, I was really impressed by this Rath Yatra, the festival of chariots, and there were so many colors and it was very vibrant. And she said the whole community came together. And she said, I'm going there next year. And she said Rath Yatra and Jagannath so perfectly, as if it was a devotee speaking. It was very inspiring to see. So we can see that they're having an influence very slowly. And in Canada also recently, another example, they called the devotees, and the devotees, they did kirtan in one of the houses of the parliament. They did kirtan there. They did kirtan and they made a speech on peace. It was after this earthquake in Nepal. They made a speech and the whole assembly, they applauded. So there are some examples like that. It's happening. There you go. Yeah, it's amazing. Very inspiring to see that. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Anantaraj Bhagavatam ki jai.